Welcome to CBS Sports Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Moore. Joining me on the line is James Herbert, who is, I guess today is we the norm. That's the motto for today is we the norm.
Norm is the best, man. Like
you have been on the Norm train for what, 2 years now? 3 years? I don't know how long he's been in the league.
But I mean, basically this is his second year, but basically from his first summer league, I was on the Norm train and I thought he was going to make it into the rotation. And then when he actually got a chance in his first year, it was like, oh my God, this guy's even better than a lot of us thought when like watching him like kill in the summer league and like seeing like D league highlights and all that. Like he's just every time he's gotten a chance, he's delivered. The weird thing is the only time that he struggled is like when he's come into games and had like a smaller role and when he hasn't really known what's going on. Like the announcers were talking last night about his numbers being totally different when he's starting and coming off the bench. And that's not just because of like overall production is obviously going to be bigger when you're playing more minutes, but like per minute, he's been way better. And I think he has dramatically shifted two first round series now in 2 years. And both times he went into the series completely out of the rotation. It's amazing that this story repeated itself.
25 points on 8 of 11 shooting, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, 3 steals, 1 block, a plus 23, and a Raptors win to reclaim control of the series.
And shutting down Chris Middleton for the second game in a row, too. Mm-hmm. Like, something has to be said for that. Like, the scoring is awesome, and, like, that's what people are going to talk about. Like, he was mainly put in the rotation so they could be more athletic, so they could be better in transition defense and to try somebody else on Middleton. Like, I don't think anybody expected him to score 25, but that's what happened. And then he also did all the things that he was asked to do from the jump.
So do you think that they've figured out the Bucks?
I mean, I don't want to say that because I thought they figured out some things after game two, and then they came out in game three and got, like, walloped.
Right.
Like, they just looked like they weren't even an NBA team in game three. So I think if this was like a regular series and you saw the Raptors like just have every answer for the Bucks defense like that, the way they were moving the ball, the way they were communicating, they just looked like an elite offense again. If you didn't know the history, then you'd probably say, yeah, they've solved it. But I'm not ready to say that. There's still potentially two games in this series. And if Milwaukee dials up the pressure again and it's a crazy atmosphere over there, then maybe the Raptors' decisions are like a beat late, and like they really can't afford that, as we've seen in this series. Like everything has to be super sharp, everybody has to be on the same page, and like you finally saw it. I didn't even think you really saw it in game four when they won, but you finally saw it like consistently in game five, and it's hard. So if they do it again, then yes, it's safe to say that like that was the turning point, but I don't think we can say that yet.
They just play with great energy. Like, their focus and energy in that first quarter when they really just took control of the game was excellent. Ibaka's been amazing in kind of being, Ibaka's been the guy that they needed DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry to be, not in stat production, but Ibaka, like, kind of, I think, figured out after game three, like, okay, I'm gonna have to bring, like, a high level of energy and focus and keep everybody kind of tethered because it's pretty clear that Kyle and DeMar are gonna drift away at times. And he's really done that. And it feels like Ibaka is the one that ignites their runs. And those other guys kind of follow him. I thought DeRozan was really good last night, too. Powell's mm-hmm. obviously amazing. But Ibaka, I think, deserves a lot of credit for turning the series around as well with how he's played.
Yeah.
You know, 8 of 10 from the field for 19 for him. He set the tone defensively. And they beat him on both ends.
And offensively, in the first quarter, he started the game with a three-pointer and then a massive dunk in the first, like, 2 minutes.
Yeah, and like they beat him on both ends, right? Like offensive efficiency in game five, 123.6, defensive rating 100.6. Like they beat him by 23 points per 100 possessions, and that's a lot. That's a huge amount. That starting lineup was a plus 36.7, which is excellent. I mean, they just, you know, they've just taken it to him, and the Bucks don't seem to know how to respond. They got a good game from Giannis, 12 of 19 for 30 points, 9 boards, 3 assists, 3 steals.
Yeah.
And it didn't matter. You know, it just did not matter because they couldn't get stops, and nobody else was able to score. And so I thought, you know, Monroe was 4 of 6, but I thought that Jonas did a much better job of attacking him when they were matched up.
Valanciunas was excellent as a reserve yesterday. Yeah. Like, he really took advantage of his minutes. He had a few, like, when he first came in, there were a few, like, bad decisions and turnovers, but I thought he got that straightened out in his second stint. He was great.
No Raptors in a minus for plus minus.
I have one thing to say. Is like, it's kind of unfortunate because of the way the game played out that like Lowry and DeMar are not who we're talking about. And like, I'm as guilty as anyone. Like, I wrote about Powell and Ibaka last night. I thought that was the story. And I thought also I had an angle on that as to like what this team could look like in the future if they just fully embrace being versatile and spacing the floor and maybe making Powell a permanent starter or reconfiguring the team in some other way. But Lowry and DeRozan's decision making in that game was far better than at any other point in the series. Lowry was playing with a really sore back. Like he went and did a workout at the practice court upstairs at the ACC before the game, so he didn't have to like take a while to like get into the game and get loose. And apparently he was just lying on his back with a heating pad at halftime for like the entire time in the locker room. And you couldn't really tell aside from the fact the announcers kept bringing it up. Like he looked really good. He was really decisive. He got rid of the ball quickly. And I thought DeRozan's decision making when he was double teamed and trapped, like that's what we were talking about coming into this series and certainly after game one. And you'd seen him sort of make strides there, especially in the regular season. I thought he dealt with all that stuff really well, but that he made almost perfect decisions yesterday. Some long twos, but generally in situations where he had some sort of advantage, but he didn't force much at all, and I thought he made really great passes and was a big reason why the offense hummed like it did.
Yeah. Now everybody played well. Nobody on the Bucks played well except Giannis. And now the Raptors have a chance to close it out in game six. So this is definitely going seven. So because I mean, here's my thing, man, is just like you are right in that you said like this team kind of zigs when it zags. I think that you over exaggerated because you tend to look at last year more than like their overall history, because their overall history is kind of failure. Like that's their overall playoff history is like,
of course it is, but whoa. They have their best team they've ever had now.
They do. PJ Tucker and Ibaka have made a huge difference, and that's very notable. I guess that we are kind of in a point where it's, you know, you can believe the Raptors are done when they're eliminated, and you can believe the Raptors are in control when they win four games. Like, that's about where we're at with this squad. I'm a little, I guess this series has me a little, I'm not thrilled about next round. I'm just not. Like, I think if we're ranking the likely next round series, the Cavs-Raptors feels like it's going to be last. Like, I don't... Maybe the defense, maybe Ibaka and Tucker will really make that much of a difference, and they'll be able to... I mean, they're going to score on the Cavs defense. Maybe it'll be enough. Mm-hmm.
Let's save the preview for if they actually win four games, but I get where you're coming from. Like, you're feeling uninspired by what you have seen from them in the first round, and I can't blame you. I mean, the last night was legitimately the first time they looked like themselves.
Right.
That was the first time that they looked like they did in the regular season. You have to obviously give the Bucks a ton of credit for freaking them out with their length and their aggressiveness on defense, but, like, I can go back and look at what I wrote coming into the series. Like, I knew that would be a factor, but I did think that the Raptors had shown enough in the regular season to think they were, to think they were sort of past that, and they weren't. Like, they really struggled, and unless it's another decisive victory in Game 6, then that's going to be a huge part of the storyline going into the next round. And I think I kind of look at this, like, I look at these playoff series, I think, a little bit differently, in that I just kind of take it as a given that even if you're a really good offensive team, like, you're going to have to win ugly sometimes. And, like, I think that matters, that they're able to do that, that they're able to win with defense, that they were able to win a game four that otherwise didn't look very impressive, but they still pulled it out when they absolutely needed to, even if it was based on kind of going for unconventional, like, isolation plays and just trying to catch the Bucks off guard and trying to avoid the pick and rolls rather than using that pressure against them, which is what we had spent so much time talking about and writing about and what they did so well last night. But I still think that was something they needed to do. That's something that, like, the Rockets did against the Thunder in the last game. And I think that's just sort of a part of playoff basketball. And that is one way that, and you might laugh at this, but that's one way that I think last year's, like, really topsy-turvy up and down playoff run actually helped the Raptors.
It did teach them.
Because even though so many of those games were, like, just so stressful and pressure filled and ugly, like offensively so ugly, and every team knew that the set the other team was running and just like snuffed it out immediately, and people just had to make stuff up and figure things out and go one-on-one a lot of time. I think that did teach them how to win that way, and I think that came in handy certainly in game four, and that might have to be what happens in game six or game seven or next round.
Well, and last year was nice because they kind of got training wheels, right? Like, they faced the Pacers, who obviously didn't have enough, and then Whiteside went down. And so they kind of, like, they got, like, training wheels on how to get through a playoff series. I think that really helped them. And we're kind of seeing it now. You know, it's not going to shock me if the Bucks come back and win Game 6. It's not going to surprise me if the Raptors win a close one. I believe in what you're saying. Right. I don't necessarily think it's winning ugly. I was talking about this. Great teams win when things don't go right for you.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
When your game plan isn't what happens. Like, the Rockets, I think, legitimately, like, did that. Like, the Thunder did all sorts of things to muck up what they want to do. They didn't get what they needed. They didn't get, like, they couldn't hit threes. Harden was bad. They still won that game. I feel more like game four was really just, like, the Bucks just played like garbage. Like, I feel like it's just, like, the Bucks just really played badly.
I think they played well defensively.
So I still want to see Toronto win. Like, I want to see Toronto. Here's the big thing. I want to see Toronto win a game when DeRozan and Lowry are not good. Like, I want to see them win that game. Like, find a way to win, or at least when one of them is really struggling. And the defense is playing at a decent level, and they're actually functioning pretty well. I'm going to be interested to see, but I don't know how much longer we're going to see that, because they're getting ready to face the Cavs. But look, we've seen this before also, where a team looks like horrible in the first round, and then the matchup's different. Like,
right, exactly.
You know, and there's not a lot of reason to believe that it's going to be different with the Cavs, especially with what LeBron's on right now. But we have to see it. We have to give them the benefit of the doubt if they advance. They still have to. Hey, guys, it's the playoffs. You're busy. You don't have time to get a great meal together. You don't want to go out. You don't want to miss any of these great playoff games. I personally want to get you 3 free meals, and I'm going to do it with Blue Apron. Let me tell you how. All you got to do is go to blueapron.com/ionmba. Here's why you got to check out Blue Apron. Okay, Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. Their mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everybody. They've got partnerships with over 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranchers, so you're going to get sustainable food that tastes great. It's the best combination possible. You're going to get beef, chicken, and pork that come from responsibly raised farms, and the seafood is sourced under standards developed in partnership with the Monterey Bay Aquarium Seafood Watch. If you haven't been out there, they know what they're talking about. Blue Apron can be delivered to almost anywhere in the continental U.S., so you're going to get it wherever you are. Cooking together builds stronger meals. There's nothing better than being around with your family, and you got everybody together, and you're all cooking a meal. Those are special times. You need to hold on to those before you completely ignore them as you go watch playoff games. And you're going to save money, too. If you spend a lot of money at restaurants or high-end grocery chains, you can now spend under $10 per person for a delicious meal. Some of the ones you're looking at this month at Blue Apron include spinach and fresh mozzarella pizza with olives, bell peppers, and ricotta salata. I love olives. Sweet and sour salmon with bok choy, carrot, and ginger fried rice. Parmesan-crusted chicken with creamy fettuccine and roasted broccoli. And baby broccoli and fontina paninis with hard-boiled egg and arugula salad. Just sounds awesome. Not all ingredients are created equal. And fresh, high-quality ingredients make a real difference, so you know where your food's coming from, and that's one of the best things about Blue Apron. It's affordable, you get great variety, it's flexible, you can get whatever plan you're looking for. It's easy, it comes with step-by-step instructions, and they can all be done in 40 minutes or less. And Blue Apron's freshness guarantee promises that every ingredient in your delivery arrives ready to cook, or they'll make it right. Check out this week's menu and get your first 3 meals free, with free shipping, by going to blueapron.com/ionmba. You will love how it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron, so don't wait. That's blueapron.com/ionmba. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. I haven't seen anything of Wizards Atlanta. You were focused on Bucks Raptors. We're going to skip that right now. I will only say I'm disappointed in the Wizards. They're the better team here. They should have won the series in 5. I picked them in 5. They should have won these last 2 games. The fact that they haven't, I think, is disappointing. They should have won 1 of the last 2 games. The fact that
can we credit Jose Calderon, though? And sure. can we talk about how bad the Wizards bench has been, yeah, like all series, yeah, and most of the season, and how Bogdanovich and Jennings were not enough?
Yeah. I will say this. Like, they're facing a much better defense than Toronto is. Like, the Hawks are a great defense. They have been a great defense. They are always a good defense. Like, the Hawks are just a legitimately great defensive team, which is really a credit to Mike Budenholzer, because, like...
But it's about the matchup, though, right? Like, it's different. Like, I think the Bucks are, like, uniquely good defensive team against a team that has two ball-dominant guards, because they pressure the hell out of you on the perimeter, and they have length. And those two guards, they're not, like, the like super long and athletic. Like, they're crafty. And that's, like, the Hawks might not do as good a defensive job against the Raptors as the Bucks do, even though the Hawks were a better defensive team all year.
Right.
And that's what the playoffs are about. But I get what you're saying. Like, the Hawks are so solid defensively. They're so smart. And they're smart offensively, too. Like, if you look at the lineups they're playing, like, the floor is spaced all game, and it's spaced even more when Howard's on the bench. And they just – they make the Wizards guard them. And even though they weren't a great offensive team in the regular season, like, you saw it. Like, it's when they have the ball moving like they used to, like, that was still a principle of the team all year, even though they weren't always doing it. Like, they still want to play that pretty basketball. They still want to find the open man and make the extra pass. So I think – and I didn't mean to interrupt, but, like, I do think – like, it's fair to be super disappointed in the Wizards, but the Hawks are, like, legitimately winning these games and playing well.
Yeah, they are. I think they're probably playing a little bit above what they're capable of, which is fine. That's going to happen sometimes. Like, Paul Millsap's been great for them. Like, he to me has been a big difference in what I saw this morning. Like, just his energy level and how he's playing. It does really come down to the bench, too, especially, like, when the benches match up against their starters. That's when disaster really strikes. The other thing, and it's not, like, everybody's got injuries, so I never say that this is a thing. Like, it's just a thing. The Wizards could really use Yamahimi.
Oh, absolutely.
Because, like, their big problem, really, is that they don't have, like, offensively, yeah, they struggle, but, like, Bogdanovich was 5 of 9, you know? Like, it's more a matter of they don't have anybody. They can't get stops, and if you can't get stops, right, versus the Hawks, you're in trouble, because that team's not good offensively. And, you know, they only had like they had 109 offensive efficiency last night, which kind of vibes with a little I saw this morning. But they had a 99.9 defensive rating. I want to continue pointing this out. John Wall has been amazing in these playoffs. Like,
he's been freaking incredible.
Like, just amazing. Like, 22 points and 5 boards, 10 assists last night, 2 steals, and they lose again. They even got a good Bradley Beal game. Yep. I do want to say this. When Marcus Morris started talking nonsense in game 1, I didn't think it was a good idea. I was like, you have this.
Yeah, Markieff has been outplayed by Millsap, like, thoroughly since then.
Like, you have this series under wraps. Like, you have this series. This series is yours. Taking it to the Hawks, who are not a super emotional team. Like, that team is not, like, volatile. But you gave them reason to get up for it. And, like, it's great that you want to have swagger. That's excellent. Congratulations. But, like, it would just be better if you just played well. Like, just play well. Go on to the next round. Like, you have bigger sights. Because here's the killer is they had an opportunity to win this thing in 5 games. I think legitimately they could have won, like, last night's game, and then the Hawks were pumped for that game 3. They could have won last night's game and then taken game 5, and then they could have rested while Boston tries to get out of the Chicago series, and you would have been really set up. Like, they have a great opportunity to make the conference finals. But they didn't defend well enough. And that's you know, so that to me.
I think now it's like not unrealistic to think the Celtics could win in 6 and the Wizards could go to 7.
Right.
Like that's how much these series have changed.
Portland was a bad team the entire year. They're a bad team. They got blown out. The Warriors are going to beat everybody. Andrew Sharp and Ben Gollum.
I think you underrate Portland, and I thought you underrated them last year, too. So we disagree a bit there. Like, I think they really showed something after the All-Star break. I think Nurkic totally changed them.
For a while.
And that is what you have to hang on to if you're the Blazers. Is like,
I guess here,
look at what they were with Nurkic.
But
and
here's
those
my
two
question.
Guys.
What happens if that wasn't real? Like, if that falls back, if he goes back to being the player he's been for the majority of his career, what happens then?
Well, I mean, if he goes back to the player he was in Denver before the trade, which I'm not sure is the majority of his career, like, then, yeah, of course, you're in trouble.
Dude,
I've
been in Denver for the duration of his career. Like,
yeah, and in his first season when he was healthy and when Jokic wasn't there, he looked really good. He looked like a promising
center. And there were real concerns from management and the front and coaching staff about his approach to the game, even in his rookie season.
I'm talking more about it, like, on the court. Like, on the court.
This other stuff matters. Like, this.
It could.
All right.
It could. But I think they're, like, watching how they played from the All-Star break on, I think there's plenty of reason for optimism. Like, I don't think what we saw against the Warriors. And, by the way, like, aside from the clincher, the Blazers competed in this series. Like, I thought they did pretty well for themselves. These games were pretty close for the majority of them. I mean, there were two blowouts, and the other two, the Blazers, like, took it to them, like, offensively. Like, they played really well against a really amazing defense, like, the best defense that there is.
They had a really nice three quarters in game one, and they had a really good game three. They did not. Whenever,
given the Nurkic wasn't there, I think they, like, against that Warriors team, I think they did fine. Yeah. I think they have nothing to be ashamed of based on the way they played.
Okay.
Last night was just total destruction.
No one was stopping him last night. I mean, they could have,
like, the Warriors that's a write off. But the three games previous, like, I got, if I'm a Portland fan, I got no problem with the way they played.
I mean,
this
is the same thing as the Heat. Like, this, they were 41-41 because they got a hot streak and they had one of the easiest schedule. Like, you know, I did playoff picture. I know this stuff. They have the easiest schedule over the last month of the season. It was them in Boston. They had the easiest schedules. So I'm just saying there is a very good possibility that the Portland Trail Blazers are just not a good team. Like, there's a lot of evidence that suggests that, like, the Blazers are just not a good team. They have good players. I love Dame. I love CJ. I love Aminu. Like, those three guys are guys that I would want on my squad. But I think there's reason to be really concerned about, because, again, they made that run last year and it was like, the Blazers are on the rise! And I was like, I don't buy this. Like, I don't think this team is actually good. And then they backslid this year, and then they made the Nurkic trade and it worked out for them. They made a gamble, and I said at the time, like, it was a good gamble. It was a good gamble to see if it would work out, and it did. I want to see how it plays out long term. But
yeah, me too.
But there's also a really good chance that they backslide again. And if you backslide from 41-41, how are we going to define them as a good team?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm saying I'd be surprised if that happened. Okay. Like, I think they should be an above 500 team next year. But I mean, we'll see what happens in the summer.
We are
going to
make some sort of bet on this. We are going to make some sort of arrangement around this situation.
You're going to turn me into a Portland fan just because of this bet.
I am going to. You're a Raptors, Celtics, Blazers fan. That's, like, the way to define it.
Oh my God! I'm neither. None of those things.
None of those things. You are an objective observer.
Thank you.
Let's go back to Sunday. Do we think? Okay, Rondo is practice today. He didn't practice. He was shooting around today, and Hoiberg's not listing him out for Game 6 and 7. He says right now he's out for game 5. Is it going to matter? Like, is this one done?
I mean, can he hold a basketball?
He's shooting.
Like, all right. I mean, if he comes back, then yeah, of course that matters. Like, his defense on Isaiah, his offensive rebounding, like, the way that he, like, controls their offense. It's been, it might be the single biggest surprise of the whole playoffs, but, like, he completely changes that series. And without him, like, the Bulls don't have anybody to guard Thomas, and they don't have anybody to really run the offense. And I mean, that resulted in Isaiah Cannon hitting the floor when he hasn't played basketball in forever. And I just, like, regardless of what you think about Rondo generally and what you think about his regular season play over the past few years, like, it's undeniable he was good in the first couple of games and a huge reason why they won them. So, like, yeah, of course, like, if he's going to be able to play like he did, then that matters. I was under the impression that it was extremely unlikely that he'd be able to come back, but I mean, we've seen him play through incredible stuff before. I mean, the elbow and the ACL, he didn't even come out of the game right away. Yeah, like,
it's crazy that you think
I guess I shouldn't write him off.
When that happened, I was immediately like, oh, he's going to play in game 5. Like, I think he's probably going to play in game 5. And if he doesn't play in game 5, he's definitely playing in game 6. Like, it's how he's wired, man. Like, some guys have pain tolerance. And the other thing is, with, you know, with fractures, you can get around it. Like, we've just seen it. Like, Wall played through it, right? Like, you can get around fractures, which is crazy.
Wall wasn't the same, though.
Which is crazy. Why is it not the same?
Yeah. No, I said Wall wasn't the same.
No, that's true. He's not the same. The good news, though, is that Rondo doesn't need to be able to shoot. Like, he just needs to be able to pass. He just needs to be able to pass with the other hand. That's all he's got to do, right? Like,
yeah, and he's got to stay in front of Isaiah.
Yeah. Well, and that's a big deal. But at the same time,
so Jimmy doesn't have to run the offense, carry the team scoring load, and defend this like shifty, tiny point guard all game. Like, it's just too much, even for him.
But at the same time, I just think the Celtics have kind of flipped it, and they've got the confidence now. And I just mostly, I as much as everyone thinks that I'm like an Isaiah hater, I just don't think he's going to lose this one. Like, I think Isaiah's like, no, I'm done with this. We are winning this.
I mean, that game four was one of the best performances of the playoffs. Like, he was, it looked like any number of games in the regular season where he just took over at the end.
I know.
Except it happened earlier.
It was definitely the best performance in performance of the playoffs versus Michael Carter Williams. Like, that is, that there's no question that it was the best playoff performance versus Michael Carter
Williams. I loved Isaiah just like straight up laughing in MCW's face, by the way.
I feel bad for that kid, though. I just, like, MCW has never done anything. Like, he's not one of these kids that came in and was brash. He didn't talk about being one of the best players in the league. Like, he's just trying to be a pro.
No, I have no problem with him. I'm just saying I loved, like, how Isaiah, like, reacted in that situation where he felt like he was being challenged. He was just like, what are you doing?
Yeah, and so I don't think that they have, I don't think that they've got much shot. But that's game five is on Wednesday. Tonight we have serious games. So OKC is fighting for its playoff life versus Houston. I thought that the Thunder were gonna win game four, and really, like, if you look at all the factors, you come away with being like, wow, the Thunder really should have won that game. Like,
Harden, it was a huge missed opportunity.
Yeah, Harden had a bad game. They got a good Russ game. All of these things happened, and they still found a way to lose that game. I think that at the same time, I kind of think that the Thunder are going to win this one, too. Like, it's Houston -7. I am definitely taking OKC +7 in this one.
I don't know about the spread, but I expect Houston to close it out. I think that last game, like, really impressed me for the Rockets. And it's like, I kind of reacted similarly to the win they had right before that. I guess it was game two, where it was like, wow, like, they're not just winning pretty. Like, they're winning difficult games. They're responding to adversity. They're coming back from huge deficits. And they're just sort of toughing it out. And I think there were serious doubts about whether or not they'd be able to do that, especially against a team as physical, as athletic, as, like, defensive-minded as the Thunder are. And, look, I think sometimes we get caught up in, like, momentum from the last game when, like, each game is different. But at the same time, I was just so impressed by the way they won that game that, like, by all accounts, they should have lost. Like, Harden was bad. He was 5-for-16, and he was just slow. And he said after that it was an ankle injury, and I think everybody was collectively like, oh, that makes sense now. And, like, Ryan Anderson has been off for most of the series, and they were just – it looked like they were kind of out of it early in that game. And the fact they were able to come back and win the way they did and hold off the Thunder in the end, and I know it got really, like, disjointed and crazy, and Adams missed that free throw and Russ hit that three.
Letting Nene get the ball into the basket and fouling him.
Yeah, I mean, lots of weird stuff happened, but I think the way that the Rockets pulled that out with so many things going wrong, it has me thinking, like, well, like, they're going to play so much better this time, and I'm not sure how much better the Thunder are going to play. So that's why I'm feeling the Rockets on this one, but I think most of the NBA world wants the Thunder to win because this has been a pretty fun series.
I think role players are going to play better at home, which is good for Houston. But I also just kind of feel like OKC's done a lot to muck them up. OKC's done a lot to muck them up and make this hard and tire them out. And there were so many weird things that happened in that game. Like, people were laughing at the late game execution, and rightfully so. But at the same time, like that's not going to happen again. Like you're not going to foul Nene on that play 9 times out of 10. It's just like one of those things, and that swings playoff series. It'll probably wind up being the difference in this series. I do think though that OKC will find a way to pull this back to OKC for Game 6. I think Houston wins there because they've been better, but I don't know. I continue to like this matchup for OKC. Like they've been in these games.
That's interesting because I don't. Like the more I watch, the more I hate it for them.
Like they've been in these games. They've hung with them. They're getting otherworldly shooting from Andre Roberson, right? Like that's probably going to go back down. But I do feel like, and part of it is just like, I feel like, you know, we're going to get another, we've gotten the bad Russ game. I feel like we're going to get the incredible Russ game at some point, you know, like, are we really going to go out?
I mean, that's the thing we've seen from Russ all year is like, he can win you a game and it can even happen against good teams. Like a lot of them happen against bad teams, but like he can just, in the fourth quarter, just score like 20 something points, like on his own. And when you triple team him, he'll find the guy and they'll score. Like he can, like that Russ offense, it's like, it's just the Russ offense. But when he's hitting those threes and when he's really feeling it, then it's kind of unstoppable. So yeah, like you can't even, like, as impressed as I am by the Rockets, and I do think they'll probably win. Like I can't count the Thunder out because, like, we've seen Russ do incredible stuff all year, like coming back from huge deficits, like all of this. So that could happen at any time. No one.
Guys, we are getting to these games that are the most important of the season, those amazing Game 6s and Game 7s. You want to be in the building, and SeatGeek is going to get you there. SeatGeek is the smartest way to find tickets for the games you want to go to this spring. There's nothing like being in the building for those games, and with SeatGeek, you can get them for great value with guaranteed seats. I've got the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it's by far the easiest way I've found to buy basketball tickets and all sorts of tickets. I'm looking at theater tickets for my wife. Same kind of deal. I was looking at them just the other day on SeatGeek. I could be anywhere, and with just a few taps, I can instantly find seats for this weekend or any game. With SeatGeek, you always get the best deal because they're going to price compare across multiple sites. Those prices are always going to vary, but SeatGeek is going to find you the best ones every time. And SeatGeek wants to help you, so they're going to give every seat a grade so you get the best idea of where you're getting the most bang for your buck. Plus, every ticket you buy on SeatGeek comes with a 100% guarantee, so you can shop for tickets with confidence. Best of all, my listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. To get that rebate, here's all you got to do. Download the SeatGeek app. Go to the settings tab and click add a promo code. Enter promo code IEYE, and SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first purchase. Download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code I today. Memphis plays San Antonio. The Spurs are 10-point favorites, which on the surface I kind of feel like is insulting to Memphis considering how they played in this series. But then I rethought about it, and I'm taking San Antonio because role players play better at home. They're just going to shoot the lights out. Like, this will be a response game from the Spurs, and it's going to come down to Game 6. But I'll take the Spurs minus 10 in this one just because the Grizzlies have played excellent, and they have won these games, and they deserve way more credit than what they got for that game 4 that they took. I felt like everyone was just, like, the entire conversation was about Kawhi, who was amazing. Incredible. I did the 10 most amazing moments from that game because it was so good. But, like, Mike Conley matched him, and then Mike Conley beat him. Like, the Grizzlies won that game, and they deserved, I think, more credit than they've gotten. And it's almost like everyone's like, oh, look at Kawhi. Like, ah, oh, just, you know, like, look what he's... Look. And it's like, the series is tied! The 2 seed and the 7 seed are tied 2-2. Memphis has tied the mighty Spurs 2-2. Like, this is... Like, I just don't feel like enough people are talking about this, and Memphis has done a lot to hurt him. I said this morning on Memphis Radio, it's going to come down to, people kind of think of Pop as like this, and he is, right? He's like a brilliant coach, but in playoff series, Pop usually, like, he has like 2 to 4 adjustments, and then once those are out, like, that's it. Like, he doesn't continue to tinker. He pretty much goes with the plan that he's like, we should win this way. Like this is what we need to do, and if we can't win that way, then we don't win that way. If Memphis hasn't gotten adjusted to yet, like, they're going to hang in this series. I'm pretty fascinated by the series overall. I think it's been the best series of any first-round series.
It's been one of the best, for sure. I think that game was the best game, obviously, the Kawhi and Conley duel. Mm-hmm. My head says San Antonio. My heart says Memphis for this game. So I'm going to do the classic thing is choosing the Spurs, and then I'll be happy either way.
I took Spurs in six. I took Spurs in seven. Most of us actually gave the Grizzlies more of a chance in the series. Like, there wasn't a sweep selection across the board. So it's kind of playing out the way we kind of thought it would. I've just been really impressed with Memphis. People decide this. Like, they're without Tony Allen and Chandler Parsons. That's a huge part of that's their best perimeter defender and their best perimeter weapon when he's healthy, if he ever gets healthy ever again. And they're still making this work. Like, Andrew Harrison coming up with a monster block, you know? Like, all of these random role players that they picked up along the way making plays for this team, Memphis just won't die, man. They just will not die.
Yeah, I wrote, like, pretty much what you just said. Like, I just wrote this thing. It's like 20 things we've learned from the playoffs. And, like, I had a section on the Grizzlies, and I mentioned exactly what you just said. Like, Harrison's block and the fact that they're undermanned. I mean, like, just think about the Parsons thing. Like, they gave him a max contract. And, like, I know there were injury risks. But the reason they did that was they've never in their history had somebody like him. Like, they always needed another playmaker, another guy to stretch the floor, and just, like, a tall wing that can, like, guard other guys his size and that can, like, slide up to the four and play stretch four when they needed. Like whatever qualms you had with the contract and the risk involved, like, there is no denying that they needed somebody like him. And they have nobody like that now. And they're starting 40-year-old Vince on the wing. They're starting James Ennis when before they went with Wayne Selden. Like, they really probably shouldn't be in this series with Allen out, but they've just played their style. They've done their thing. Conley has been incredible after game one, and there they are. Like, they're just – when there's something resembling healthy, which they were not last year against the Spurs, whenever they are, they're never going to be a tough out. They're always going to make you work. They're always going to be annoying to play against, and I think they've – really kind of flustered the Spurs in these last couple of games. And that doesn't mean the Spurs won't win the next two games. And hey, maybe they'll win them handily. But I think just what Memphis has done so far, considering their situation, should be seen as, like, really, really, really impressive. And also, like, a justification for what they did last summer in changing their style and empowering Mike Conley, because clearly he deserved to be empowered in that way.
I have an admission for you. I have something I have to admit.
Yes.
I don't care about Clippers Jazz.
Why?
The series is pointless.
Oh, my God. The series is awesome.
If the Jazz win, it's Blake Griffin. If they do win, I still don't... Part of me can think about it and be like, you know, they do have a lot of versatility, and they've got size inside, and they're so good defensively. Like, maybe they could really give the Warriors a challenge. And then part of me is just like, nah. Like, this series is entirely about who's going to be chum for the Warriors in the next round.
But why does that matter? Like, that doesn't... Why should that color the way that you watch the games when they're happening?
Because I think that... One, I think that, like, making the conference finals is kind of, like, the goal here. Is like who can get to that second round. The other thing is, I just haven't... For whatever reason, I'm just not really compelled. Like, I just haven't found these games to be... I think part of it is, if you really look at it, what's happened is, like, the Clippers have outplayed them, and then Joe Johnson's gone nuts. Like, that's what this series is the Clippers have outplayed them, Blake got hurt, Joe Johnson went nuts. And there's a certain part of me...
But there have been so many other little things in the series, though. Like, that's not wrong.
There's a part of me that's like there's a part of me that's like, well... There's a part of me that's like, well, as much as I respect Joe Johnson, I wrote a whole thing on him the other night about, like, this is why you want veterans, and, like, this is what Joe Johnson does, and, like, his career is incredibly underrated. But I'm also like, you're having to survive on Joe Johnson. Like, that's the only way you're beating the Clippers without Blake, is Joe Johnson's got to go supernova in the fourth quarter. Like, that's your plan.
I mean, the first time they did have Blake, and the Jazz didn't have Gobert the first time Joe Johnson saved them. And the second time, the Jazz didn't have Gordon freaking Hayward, their best player. Or second best player if you value Gobert's defensive skills that much.
They got a lot of heart.
Like, that's true. I think the series has been amazing. Like, Joe Ingles has been freaking spectacular. And Chris Paul, I think, has been one of the top, like, three or four players in the playoffs.
Yet, man.
It's just...
It just sucks.
But he individually has been amazing, and the offense has been amazing because of him. And his defense is obviously top notch, as it always is. And I've just been super impressed by the Jazz, who, like, they've gone through all these years of dealing with injury after injury. So, of course, they're not going to have Gobert at the beginning. And, of course, as soon as they get him back, Hayward is going to go down. Like, this is just how things have been for them. And it sucks because I think this could be a truly great team, like maybe the second best team in the West if they were fully healthy.
Whoa!
But they just haven't been that. That's
All right.
That's what I predicted at the beginning of the year. You know that.
You were wrong.
And
You were wrong, but
I mean, like, there's no track record of them having everybody healthy, so I don't think you can, like, definitively say that. Like, I predicted they would, like, 56
games.
You're
never going to be fully healthy. Like, injuries are part of it. You know that.
But, like, something close to it. They had, more meaningful injuries than any other team in the league.
Look, I like this Jazz. Jazz team.
They still did what they did. They're incredibly good. They're incredibly versatile. They're really good on both ends. I think their offense has looked more impressive to me now than it did during the regular season. I just think this series has been really great. And yeah, like, will the team that wins lose to the Warriors? Yeah, of course that's what's going to happen. But I don't think that should matter when you're watching these games.
It just doesn't feel like they're actually, like, neither of these teams feel threatening. They don't, it just feels like they're barely getting past each other, who are both kind of, they're both flawed in different ways. It's just kind of, I don't know. Here's what's really weird. Their offenses have been really high. Like, the Jazz are great defensively, and yet they're giving up a 110.3 defensive rating in this series.
But I think that's what I like. It is, like, I don't think the defense has been bad, and yet the offensive numbers have been good. Like, I think both teams have been playing at a really high level.
Yeah, maybe I just haven't been. It's at the end of the night. I'm distracted by other storylines and stuff like that. It just, for whatever reason, it hasn't it hasn't really sparked me. It's just felt like a lot of randomness. Feels like a lot of random stuff going on in this series.
Well, that's when you have two teams that are that close. Like, that's what it's going to be, yeah. Right? Like, these, they were separated by like 0.1 in net rating throughout the year. This is the 4-5 matchup. They had the same record. Like, it's going to come down to, like, Joe Johnson going nuts or what have you. Like, that's the series is going to be randomness. It might not be now because maybe with Blake out, if Hayward is going to get over this illness, then maybe the Jazz just have an actual real advantage here, but I don't know.
I don't know. Well, maybe if the Jazz come out and play like Dynamite versus the Warriors, I'll be very interested in that. That'll be very compelling. We're running out of, I'm getting sad because I'm like, we're running out of series where stuff matters. I'm like, oh no. Because with the Warriors, and I'm no longer as angsty about the Warriors' dominance as I used to be. I'm like, it is what it is. Like, they're gonna roll over everybody, and that's how it is. Like, they're gonna hit pull up, 45 pull up threes and roll over everybody, and that's just like how it's gonna go. Like, that's where the league is this year, and I don't have any. I mean, here's the problem with the bigger picture conversation, because it's like, if you say, like, well, the Warriors are just going to roll over everybody, it's like, have you learned nothing from last year? And I'm like, guys, it was the greatest comeback in NBA Finals history. It was the most improbable thing that could have ever occurred. It is a testament to LeBron's legacy, no doubt. How are you possibly going to convince me that's going to happen twice? How are you going to, with Kevin Durant? Like, how are you possibly going to convince me of that?
Well, I mean, they also were down in that Thunder series, too.
Yeah. Like, you're facing Kevin Durant.
Yeah. But I just mean, like, I don't think it's only because of the Cavs thing. Like, they had an altogether bumpier road than anybody expected after they won 73 games.
I mean, they're not and, I don't think that their model is great for playoffs. I've never thought that. Like, they struggled versus the Grizzlies. They actually struggled more versus the Rockets than that series wound up showing. Basically, like, the Rockets lost games 1 and 2 on heartbreakers, and they did not have the emotional energy for game 3, and the Warriors brought it. Like, I was the most impressive game throughout their entire playoff history to me is genuinely Rockets Warriors 2015 game 3, where they came into Houston and just said, nope, we're done. This is it. You're broken. And the Rockets said, yeah, you're right. we're broken. And that was, and that was the end of that series. That was, to me, was the most impressive performance that they've had in the playoffs. Most people will turn around and say game six versus the Thunder. But to me, that really seriously, like having been in the building, that was Klay Thompson did some stuff. Like, Klay Thompson had one of the greatest playoff performances I've ever seen. And sometimes one dude can do that to you. But for a team performance, it's that game three in Houston. That was the most impressive one to me. I don't know how to balance probability and inevitability, because like probability does not equal inevitability. Like the Warriors aren't absolutely 100% going to win the title, but if you ask me to think about like how is this going to play out, I'm like, they're going to kill everybody. Like, look at them, look at how good they are, they're amazing.
Yeah, I mean, they're that good, but at the same time, I'm going to be super interested to watch the next round. I'm going to be even more interested to watch the conference finals, and then if it's Cleveland again or whoever, like, I don't think any of these are going to be, like, boring. Like, I don't think any of these are I don't think we're going to struggle to find ways to talk about them.
Where should Paul George go?
Oh, God. I don't know. Like... It's hard because, like, it's hard to, like, figure out trades that make sense. If he was going into free agency, I think it'd be a different conversation. But, like, there have to be two sides here. Like, it has to be somewhere that he wants to play, and somewhere that, like, has stuff to give back to the Pacers that makes sense. Like, I think there's a reason everybody talks about the Lakers because they have a lot of assets. But also, if you're Los Angeles, like, do you really want to do that instead of just waiting a year? Like, what is the competition? Like, I don't even know what the options are.
The Larry Bird's situation is what's really fascinating here. Is like, is Bird if Paul George goes to him and is like, look, man, I gave you like 7 good years. I've tried to be positive. I've tried to hang in there. This team's going in the wrong direction. I think it's time for me to go somewhere else. I'm going to be a free agent next year. I want to give you the time to get a good deal on me. You know, you should pursue a trade.
In case they have no choice.
Well, I would think Larry Bird is the kind of guy that would be like, there's a 50% chance that Larry Bird's like, F you. Like, no, I'm not helping you. I'm not.
I don't think ownership is saying that. I think ownership is saying we need to get something back for him. We're absolutely not leaving him for nothing. And that's why the conversations happened at the deadline.
But ownership,
because ownership wasn't happy.
But ownership also tends to hang in there with star players. Like, ownership tends to hang on to star players too long. They tend to be the ones that are like, maybe things will turn around. Maybe we'll find something and then we won't have to trade him. And then you wind up trading him at the deadline for pennies. You know? Like, That's like the worst case scenario. That's why if I were them, I would be like on top of it this year. I would be like, and I would be trying to talk Paul George into going somewhere that's not the Lakers. That would be my big thing, is like, you don't want to go to the Lakers. Come on, man. Like, I want them to do that, because I want to talk to Paul George and be like, you don't want to go to the Lakers, man. Come on. You don't want to do, like.
So if you're the Pacers, who do you talk to? You call Boston?
Boston.
Maybe you even call Philly and you ask for their picks?
I don't think you can.
Maybe you call the Nuggets?
I don't know. I don't think you can do that to him by sending him to Philly. I think Denver, Boston, Houston is another option. So if you got Eric Gordon, Ryan Anderson, and picks from Houston, you're not getting good return, but you're getting some return. Like, Eric Gordon would be a really good, like, oh.
That would be such a Pacers thing to do, is to just get guys that, like, are in their prime so they can, like, try to hang on to a playoff spot, but it would do nothing for their long-term outlook.
I don't know if it'd be so Pacers. I thought that they built really well.
I mean, the Pacers never rebuild, though. I mean, the Pacers have done an incredible job rebuilding.
Let's go back. Okay, when they had that, when they had the Danny Granger team, right? Like, they built up through the draft. They drafted Hibbert and they drafted Paul George, and they had
Yeah, but look at where those picks were.
But like.
Like, Paul George was a 10 pick.
Right.
Like, Hibbert was, I believe, 17th, 19th?
Yeah, like, they were hanging in there, but they were still, like, I don't think you have to be, like, we're going to be garbage and get the number one pick, like, especially, like, I thought they did a really good job building up with young talent, and they set low expectations, and they exceeded them, and I think that's a really good
way to go. Yeah, they did an unbelievable job. It's just that they have been very vocal about the fact that they don't want to bottom out. Yeah.
Well, I don't blame them either, man. Like, here's the thing. I'm all for tanking if you're a major market. This is kind of where I've gotten to. If you're a major market that you can attract guys, I think you should tank it and rebuild it. But I'm looking around the league and looking at the teams that have been stuck in media. Like, I'm looking at the teams that have been jokes.
Nobody wants to be Orlando. I get it.
Well, for like a decade. It's not just Orlando. It's Orlando, Minnesota, Sacramento. Those are three small...
Minnesota's... I would be happy with being Minnesota right now. I would not be happy with being Sacramento. You're right.
No, but I'm...
But Sacramento also was the last couple of years at least tried to be like, we're going to bring in veterans.
Well, and like, well no, work. Let's go back. Like, think how... Okay, how long has it been since Minnesota made the playoffs?
Forever.
Yeah, it's been 13 like, years. It's been 13 years, man. So like... From that perspective, it's not just this core. It's they've failed with like three different young cores. They've gone through the we're gonna tear it down and draft fail. Okay, we gotta just, you know, tear this down and draft fail.
Some of this was poor management.
Sure. Like it's not like what here's the thing. I'm not saying that it's not on these teams. It is definitely on these teams. Like, it's your own decision making. But you also, if you hire a guy, you don't know. Like, you can't control. Rob Hennigan should have been a really good GM. He came from good stock. He had good ideas. He's a smart guy. That should have worked, right? Like, yeah. There was no reason that the Rob Hennigan, and quite honestly, if they get the number two pick in any other season, we're probably talking about the Magic differently. They got the number two pick, yeah, their best pick, in the worst draft of the last 10 years. And that's where they're at.
Yeah.
So my point with the Pacers is just, like, I would be the same way if I was in their market. It's why I keep advocating for Memphis not to tear it down. Because if the Grizzlies tear it down, there is a better than even chance they wind up the Kings. And that's brutal.
Right, no, but the Grizzlies have Mike Conley and Marcus Gasol. And the Pacers have had Paul George. And I guess my point is, if they lose George... Then what do they have? A bunch of veterans that were supposed to complement George in one way or another, and Miles Turner.
Well, I think
I don't think the roster makes sense as a rebuilding team. I it's just if you add Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson to that roster, what do you really have? That is my point. Is like you don't want to be old and mediocre. You can be young and mediocre. That's fine.
Yeah, I mean,
but like that.
And if you go with Denver, you know you can get Gary Harris, who's excellent. You're not getting Jamal Murray. Get out of that mindset right now. You're not getting Murray and you're not getting Jokic. That's the problem.
You can get Moutier.
You get Moutier, which is a project. That's one of the problems with trading with Denver is like they're not good enough for you not to get their best player if you're trading them your best player, but they are not going to give you their best player. Like you're not going
to... But I mean, they have to know that from the start. Like Jokic is just untouchable. Right.
And that's why we want to talk about the Lakers because the Lakers are able to be like, Julius Randle's not in it. Like, we can't not give up Julius Randle. We can give up Julius Randle. We can give up Jordan Clarkson.
I think Ingram's the piece you want.
I agree.
If you're trading Paul George.
Yeah. I mean, but that's really tough, though, right? Like, to give up on... Because Ingram's also looked like maybe he has the highest ceiling of any of those guys.
Yeah.
So, you know, do you go for him or do you go for D'Angelo Russell? And if that's the situation, if you're the Pacers, do you want to bring in D'Angelo Russell? With everything that he brings to the table, so there's not a perfect situation, and that's why I do hope that they make a move this summer, though. And I think the Celtics are probably the way, right? Like Boston, if they're able to recover in this series, and then if the Wizards can't get themselves together and beat them, as they very much should, and they make the conference finals, then you're able to say, like, we got the number one pick, we made the conference finals, we're right there. Let's go get Paul George. And Larry Bird.
The thing I love about Paul George in Boston is like he like fits their whole identity too. Like they want two-way stars. Like that's why when people always talk about Melo and stuff, I was like, I guess that would be fine. But like if they get Paul George and they can keep the majority of their core, they can't keep everyone. Like he's not a guy that needs to dominate the ball on every possession. He can have a high usage rate, but he doesn't have to take over the entire offense. He can still essentially play the way that they play with Paul George.
He's awesome coming off of curl screens. Like him and Al Horford would be amazing. Like they would be so good. So that's kind of where we're at with the playoffs and with Paul George, with everything else. The Cavs get a full week of rest. The Warriors are going to get probably a full week of rest. That's good, I think, for everybody there. What are your, I guess... The Steve Kerr thing is just everyone loves Steve Kerr, man. Like, for those of you listening, everyone in the NBA loves Steve Kerr, like to a man. Like, there's just no, you're not going to run into anybody who's like, I had a bad run in with Kerr. Nope. That is not how it goes. And that is not the same for every coach in the NBA. Everyone loves Steve Kerr, and everyone wants him to be okay, and it's concerning. I'm not worried about this stuff from how they're going to execute standpoint. He's put so much of a system in and developed it. It is really a heat check taunt from them that they're going to win the title with Mike Brown as coach and JaVale McGee as
starting center. Well, we don't know yet.
I mean, I want Kerr to get healthy. Like, I want him to step away, because part of it is I've talked to Steve Clifford and other coaches about how unhealthy the stress is. Like, it's just so bad for you, right? So if Kerr's not able to return, it's going to be Mike Brown. And imagine, like, Mike Brown and JaVale McGee were two key pieces of the coach and starting five of an NBA championship team. Like, what? How? How is this a thing?
Honestly, like, I think, like, we've seen it for a full season with McGee now. And I think it was fair to go into the playoffs, like, super skeptical of how it would translate. But, like, they were incredible every time he touched the floor.
Yeah, he's been great.
So I think, like...
No, yeah, he has turned the corner, and it is a testament to their system and their organization and him for... How old is McGee? I gotta look at this.
I think he's, like, 28, maybe?
Because I gotta...
Off the top of my head?
I gotta tell you a story, then. He's 29.
29.
I talked to Masai Ujiri when he gave him that extension. I caught Masai when he was in Denver. And I asked him about, like, the thought process behind it. And I said, well, a lot of times, you know, bigs don't come into their own until they've been in the league for a while. Like, Tyson Chandler took him until 25, 26 for him to become Tyson Chandler. And Masai was like, exactly. He was like, it wasn't a move about who he's going to be next year. It's about who he's going to be when he's 28 and in his prime. But JaVale was so bad and such a problem for so many teams that he winds up out of the league entirely. But now he's 29 and he's more mature and he's able to come in and deliver. And, you know, good for him for being in a place where he can contribute.
He's also healthy for the first time in a while. Like, he was, like, if you look at his stats in Dallas last year, like, I remember writing this when the Warriors signed them. Like, if you actually looked at his production, like, he was good in limited minutes for Dallas.
His per 36 production's always good. It's never about that. It's that he would make mistakes where everybody in the building would just groan. Like, JaVale McGee was one of the most mistake-prone players in the NBA. And notably now, I hadn't really thought about this, he plays on a team where it doesn't matter. He can make mistakes. It doesn't matter.
He's also, like, improved in that regard. Like, he's become a better defensive player.
Okay, he has, but you still admit that, and there's a lot of people that mention this, even Warriors people, that he still makes a lot of mistakes.
Of course. Of course he does.
I just want to be reasonable.
But he makes up for it.
Like, unless you just are, just like, is he an all-star now? Is that where you're at? Like,
no.
Is he the best center in the league? Is that where you're at? Like,
I would say he looked like that for, like, 13 minutes the other day.
Again, versus the Blazers.
No, of course not. Like, he's an effective, like, 10 to 12 minutes per game center that comes in, changes the pace, and is a huge target for alley-oops against second units.
He really has been. Like,
he's perfect in this role.
As somebody that covered him, he was infuriating for years to cover. But that has no impact on who he is in Golden State. And he's been everything that they wanted. And, like, they've raved about him as a teammate. Like, he just has turned the corner. And he's going to be – it's going to be NBA champion JaVale McGee. And that's – 2017 is very weird. Very, very weird. You got anything else?
McGee, Nene, Ingles. We didn't really talk about Nene that much. That guy was awesome in Game 4. Like, it wasn't just, like, that he was perfect from the field and had 28 points, which obviously is, like, the main story. But he was, like, doing stuff in the post. He was making defensive plays. Like, he was just everywhere. Like, the man is 34 years old, and I'm not sure I've ever seen him play better than he played in that game. And he had some really big games when he was younger and when he was approaching his prime and all that. But, like, he's been solid for Houston all year, and they've kind of kept his minutes down. And, like, and I think we all thought Capella was their number one center, but it's, like, secretly, like, I think they kind of knew Nene was going to be their guy that they'd want to close games with and they'd want to use. They just, like, used Capella more than him to try to keep him fresh, which, like, I did not see all this coming. Even though we fit in really well during the regular season, I did not see this coming.
So the Rockets are going to be really interesting in what they're going to be able to do in free agency. That's going to be, like, a really interesting thing that's going to go on. Do you realize that they've only got $60 million in guaranteed salary for next season?
That's crazy the way they've done this.
They have 60 million. They're with tax, when you factor in going into the tax, they're going to have 34 million in cap space, 54 million when you get to before they hit the tax.
How is that even possible? Who do they have under contract?
They've got Harden, Anderson, Ariza, Beverly, Gordon, Lou Will. They're getting Lou Will at 7 million. Okay. They're getting Lou Will at
That's a cheap Lou Will.
They're getting Clint Capella at 1.3 million next year. Mm-hmm. Patrick Beverly is at 6 million cuz his contract was front loaded.
I mean, the day that contract was signed, we were all like, how did they do that? That's not one of those ones in retrospect. Like, the day that was signed, it was like, that was an unbelievable steal for Houston.
No, I'm on Twitter. Like, there's a tweet that's been brought up to me about how I was like, eh, that's a fine gamble. Like, I think that there was ways it could have gone. Yeah,
really?
It could have gone either way.
Oh, my God. I was like,
you
got to
remember how
this.
Bad he was at shooting then. He really improved his shooting. Like, his shooting was a concern back then when he got signed.
Not to me.
You like small people. That's all it comes down to is like, oh, Patrick Beverly's short. Great deal. Amazing. It's incredible.
Yeah, totally. That's exactly what it is.
Ariza's.
I'm out here like bring Earl Boykins back. That'll fix everybody's problem.
Ariza's at 7.8. So they got all these dudes at under 10 mil. They've got all these guys. Yeah. You know, here's what Nene's making. Nene expires. So they're going to have to re-sign him. Okay. I'm sorry, Beverly's only at 5.5. It goes down. Beverly's at 5.5 million.
5.5. Yeah.
Jeez. 2018 is...
Like, that's less than a lot of backup point guards now.
Capella, I think, is going to be a restricted free agent, so they're going to have to re-sign him. So that's going to be a large chunk of it. Decker is only at 1.7. They've got all these young kids that they've added. But here's the thing, is they're going to have bird rights, so they're going to be able to go out and get... My bigger point in talking about this was that Houston is going to be in a position where all of these guys, D'Antoni's been around the league enough. He played, you know, he played with guys in Phoenix, and those guys have gone on to talk to other guys. He's played in, he's coached in New York, and those guys like Gallo and Wilson Chandler and all those guys know him. He coached in LA where certain guys had really good experiences with him, and he's coached in Houston. And so now, having been around for much longer, a lot of guys know that if they go to Houston, Mike D'Antoni is going to get them career years where they can make more money. So I think that's going to – like Houston, I think, is going to be a big free agent destination.
Also, it's fun. Yeah. Like aside from like a couple of high-profile superstars that didn't get along with them, like everybody loved playing in that system.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So you like tonight. You like the Rockets. You like the Spurs. And who do you like in Clippers Jazz?
Oh. I hate picking this series. Sure, the Jazz, whatever.
I've got the Clippers. I feel like...
All right.
I guess I'm in the mode of the Clippers can't keep losing all of these games they should win. Like, they should have won game one. They should have won game four. I'm like, eventually this is going to catch up, right? But, I mean, it may not. This one really is a coin flip at that point.
I think this is edging toward the Jazz actually having an advantage now. Like, if they have Gordon in the lineup and...
Gordon and Gobert.
I thought Gobert looked like pretty much himself in the last game. Like he was not totally himself, but he defensively, I thought he was making the same impact he normally does. I thought he was moving well. So I was encouraged by that. And like now you look at the difference in depth in these two teams and how Redick has been a non-factor, how Crawford, aside from the last game where he was awesome, hasn't done that much. And I'm just like, I kind of like the Jazz now. Like, if Blake Griffin was around, it'd be a little different. But, like, with Blake just being done, I know Austin Rivers is coming back, so, like, people like to joke. But, really, that actually helps them a lot, I think. But even with that, I don't know. I think Utah has a bit of an edge. So, of course, the Clippers will win because I say that. But this is the first time that I've thought, like, this isn't just...
Have you hit any of the games? Like, have the games worked out the way you thought they would in any of these games?
In this series? I mean, I don't even know how to answer that because I never really got a feel for like one team having a distinct advantage over the other. Like I could be a jerk and say they've all gone how I thought they would because they've all been close and kind of a toss up. But I mean, I haven't been smart enough to like know what's going to happen. No, like it's kind of like I thought this would be super close. I thought this would be the best series. And I kind of still think, I think this has been the best series, but I know you didn't feel that way. So
I don't think it's been bad. I don't think the series, like, I think the basketball has been played at a very high level. It's just mm-hmm. for whatever reason, I think it's mostly just that I see Golden State looming, and so I'm like, if you don't dominate this series, you have no chance. Like, you're just wasting your time. You need to get out of the series as quickly as possible. But you're not.
But did you ever think either team had a chance of dominating the series, though?
I mean, without Blake Griffin, I kind of think that the Jazz should win. You know? Like, that's the second. Yeah. I mean, that's realistically I would say that's the second best player in the series. I would say it goes Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, Gordon Hayward, Rudy Gobert would be my list of the top four players in the series.
And then DeAndre?
I would go George Hill.
It's tough. Like, these are all awesome players. I would say George Hill. Like, I have no idea. I don't like ranking things, and I have no idea how I'd rank them.
I mean, this is all after Joe Ingles being number one. Well, Joe Ingles is number one, Joe Johnson number two. So really, I'm wrong here, and the Clippers only have the third and fourth best players in the series.
Exactly.
Ingles messing up Redick has been incredible to me. That's been...
Ingles spent some time on Paul in the last game. Like,
you know what's...
It's amazing.
Here's a funny thing. So here's a funny thing about, like, our jobs. Every single time that it's not like I don't watch the Jazz. Like, I watch about 40 to 60% of their games this year, somewhere in that range. And I've watched the same over the last couple of years. Every single time I watched Joe Ingles, it was a disaster. I'm not kidding. Like, every single time I watched Joe Ingles, like, he would get blown by on assignments. He looked old and slow. He would take bad shots. Like, every time I watched Joe Ingles, it was a disaster. And so Adam...
I have always defended him whenever you've made mention of
And so Adam Mares, who is a really smart dude that writes for Vice, is a good friend of mine. He's like super high on Joe Ingles, and he's a Nuggets fan. Is like, I think the Nuggets should throw like $14 million at him. And I'm like, are you crazy? Ingles is terrible. And he's like, are you nuts? I was like, he's like the worst defender I've ever seen. He's like, are you crazy? Like, Joe Ingles is great. And now in this series, I'm like, have I just like been, is there another Joe Ingles? Like, I'm looking up online being like, is there another Joe Ingles that plays for the Jazz that I just happened to see? It's just funny how perspective like colors those kind of things, where if you watch certain guys at one time, they'll look entirely different than they do at another time.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't know. I've always liked him. He's always been like, the thing that I've always liked about him is just kind of his approach and his skill set offensively. Like, he's a really smooth offensive player. He doesn't force a damn thing, could fit in any system. This year, his shooting has been amazing. But I didn't really understand until this season. Like, I didn't understand until this season how good of a defender he was. And I think in the playoffs, he's showing everybody, like, it might be the best part of his game. And he's had a huge impact on this series. Just like, if you completely ignore the fact that he's made 40% of his threes, if you completely ignore that he had 11 assists in the last game, which is nuts, just his defense has been huge for the Jazz.
Okay. We are way long on this. Thank you for your time today. You've been excellent. You're always excellent. James is 20 things to know about the NBA playoffs. It's great. You need to go on CBS Sports and look this up. I got a lot of stuff that I even missed out of it. You guys should go. It's a really smart take on where the playoffs are at right now. Go check it out on cbssports.com. James, thanks so much.
Thank you, Matt.